Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the 62nd episode of the Feuersteins Fire Soccer Podcast Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and everything about American soccer. Don't forget, you can catch my readings over at MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com, a member of the EPL Talk family of websites. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss whatever you like. And don't forget the MLS Talk podcast hosted by Richard Farley and Chris Reardon. A lot of things going on today, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of things that honestly did not expect to happen. But first of all, let's go back and discuss about the under-17s. How about that opening game against the Czech Republic down in the stadium in Mexico where Santos Laguna plays? What a goal! What a goal scored in the fifth minute by Alejandro Guido. I mean, who would have thought, man? Who would have thought about that? That was fantastic. What a goal scored by Guido. And then in the second half, basically everything, it was all U.S. under-17s. Esteban Rodriguez with the goal in the 51st, and Alfred Coromoa in the 89th minute. I screwed up that name, but boy, let me tell you something. Those under-17s, great start. Great start to the under-17 World Cup for him. And, of course, head coach Wilmer Cabrera, great start to the under-17 World Cup down in Mexico. They're against the Czech Republic in their very first game. Next game, I have to take a look at the schedule to see when they're going to be playing again, which is going to be, I can take a look right now real quickly, when the under-17s are going to be playing again. But I got to say, great start. Uzbekistan is next. On Wednesday afternoon at 4:00 on the 22nd, and of course you can see those matches probably on ESPN University Channel. That's going to be absolutely fantastic. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen. Just to let everyone know, if you were catching my tweets, I'm working with a brand new switchboard here, courtesy of Blog Talk Radio. It's a beta version, so right there and then, this is going to be the first time I'm going to be working with it. This will be a permanent fixture after the 27th of June from Blog Talk Radio. So at the moment, I'm using a new version of the switchboard. I can still use the old version up to that time. Yeah, I know. U.S. wins on Mexican soil, Paboni's in the chat room. That was weird. Once again, folks, chat room's open. Come on in. Discuss whatever you like. If you have a question for me, I'll be trying to answer for you. If you want to talk amongst yourselves, please do so. That, you might have to say, is the first time ever winning on Mexican soil, but for the United States of any level. But you know what? That's okay. We'll take it, even though it wasn't against Mexico. But still, something has come up after the Red Bulls game this last night, which was a crazy 3-3 draw. So many things happened. We'll get to it in the Red Bulls hour, but apparently Eric Soler has written a letter to Major League Soccer about the officiating in the game. Everyone's been complaining about the officiating in Major League Soccer, even the officiating probably in the lower leagues as well. We'll wait and see what happens there. If Mr. Soler will be fined from Major League Soccer, and we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. But boy, I got to tell you, when this news popped up today from FIFA, I couldn't believe what happened. I could not believe the situation that has happened as Jack Warner, vice president, the right-hand man of Sepp Blatter in FIFA, the suspended president of CONCACAF, with everything that has been going on with him, the bribes for votes, along with the Caribbean Football Union, he has decided to terminate himself from international football. He has given FIFA his resignation. And what can we say about this? Good riddance to bad rubbish. After everything he's done, after everything he has tried to do to just basically ruin the good name of the sport, every single time he tries to get away with things. It's just amazing what this man has done. Let me read to you the official posting from FIFA's website. And it says very clearly, Jack A. Warner has informed FIFA about his resignation from his posts in international football. FIFA regrets the turn of events that have led to Mr. Warner's decision. His resignation has been accepted by world football's governing body, and his contribution to international football and to Caribbean football in particular, and the CONCACAF Confederation are appreciated and acknowledged. Mr. Warner is leaving FIFA by his own volition after nearly 30 years of service, having chosen to focus on his important work on behalf of the people and government of Trinidad and Tobago as a cabinet minister and as the chairman of the United National Congress, the major party in his country's coalition government. The FIFA Executive Committee, the FIFA President, and the FIFA management thank Mr. Warner for his services to Caribbean, CONCACAF, and international football over his many years devoted to football at both regional and international level, and wish him well for the future. As a consequence of Mr. Warner's self-determined resignation, all ethics committee procedures against him have been closed, and the presumption of innocence is maintained. The presumption of innocence is maintained. What innocence did Mr. Warner have? What innocence did he really, really try to come up with? I mean, let's be honest here. The only reason why he was probably said to be innocent was because Sepp Blatter probably found a way to save his rear end from being so embarrassing. How embarrassing is it to see someone like Jack Warner continually to find ways to put himself into a hole, only for Sepp Blatter to throw out the rope and save him from his own despicable ideas? What can we say about CONCACAF? Well, in CONCACAF, for once, I think we're going to have, hopefully, some sanity, some purity, and some good people that will finally direct this confederation in the right way. That is the main important thing right here. But at the same time, this is just one part of the corruption that has now been gone. Rid of himself. We don't have to worry anymore about a two-headed monster named Blatter and Warner. That head's been cut off. But at the same time, it looks like Bin Hammam is still in deep trouble. Still in deep, deep trouble. He is not innocent either. And what about the Caribbean Football Union? What about Mr. Lyle Austin of Barbados? Is he going to still try and assume that he is the king of CONCACAF because Mr. Blatter left? Excuse me, Mr. Warner left now? To be honest with you, Mr. Austin should just remain in Barbados inside his little palace and just allow the executive committee, along with the general secretary, to run this confederation like it's supposed to be run. And I'll admit it, it's a little sad. It's a little sad I can't play the Pirates of the Caribbean theme song anymore. But you know what? That's okay. I can still play it at my own leisure when I'm not doing the show, because it's meant to be used for something else. Not after a disgrace like Jack Warner, no matter how much that report says he has maintained his innocence. Because let's be honest, you can say anything about a man who's greedy, corrupt, and looking for as much power as possible. What would have happened, maybe, if Jack Warner found a way to backstab Sepp Blatter? That would be interesting. Obviously, the Europeans would be upset, because how can a man like Jack Warner from the Caribbean all of a sudden run FIFA? It's a European house being in Switzerland. You know, one thing I know for sure, that Jack Warner is happy he's no longer going to be involved in international football. Panorama's old dog, Andrew Jennings, will not be sniffing for any form of bribery and underhandedness. I bet you he's excited and happy. He doesn't have to worry about that anymore. But should we ever worry about this? Football is a great game. Soccer is a great game. And it needs to be run by honest people. And we like to think it's being run by honest people, but to be honest with you, it's not. We all know this. They're trying to hide it from us. But it's not true at all. What would happen, let's say, for the sake of argument, it was an American that would run FIFA? How much honesty do you think there would be in the House of Football? I would think it would at least be honest enough. What about an Englishman, you know, someone from England? Probably as well. But until that day comes, at the moment, Sepp Blatter will still be president of FIFA. And Dan Wolf, who has finally come on with his regular name, Optimus Prime for FIFA president. Yeah, he's got to transform into a soccer ball first, okay? But I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, this is finally the beginning of hopefully not just a brand new start for CONCACAF, but for a brand new start of FIFA, and hopefully Sepp Blatter will be found to be a part of the conspiracies as well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have a pretty good show for you tonight. Joining me at 8:30 will be Chris Enger from the RSL show discussing Real Salt Lake. We have Ignacio Rodriguez actually joining us at 8:45 discussing the NESL. Of course, Ottawa coming into the NESL as an expansion side. We also will talk about the crazy 3-3 draw up in Portland as the Red Bulls found a way to get a point. And, of course, laughing at the moment, which he couldn't believe that happened either. Talking Philadelphia Union, my good friend Jeff Reed. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, my friend. How are you? Are you feeling well?
I'm doing much. Let me tell you something. I couldn't believe what I was watching last night. I didn't know what the heck was going on. I thought, you know, I'll save it for the second hour, but let me tell you something, my friend. That was absolutely crazy. But I got to say, what's even more crazy
is how could the Philadelphia Union give the Vancouver Whitecaps their second win of the season?
Oh, yeah. I was quite astonished, and it's what drives me nuts sometimes. Some days I just love Peter Novak, and other days I can't understand his tactics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seemed like I know they're playing away from home, obviously. You know, in a very good atmosphere up in Vancouver, but sometimes I don't understand why he plays with three holding midfielders. At the beginning of the season, he was playing. I think it was Carl Nakazawa, Brian Carroll, and Miguel Aranzi, who were on the same team, even when we were at home. And I think he was doing that on the weekend, too, if I'm not mistaken. But we just didn't create enough chances. That was the bottom line. I'm not sure if we missed Carlos Ruiz a little bit on Saturday, but Sebastian Latour hasn't been quite up to standard this year, and he had a gorgeous chance near the end where he just, I don't know how he missed that one. But... yeah, I mean, we got beaten by a great goal. That's really all I can say. But just got to regroup and get ready for Wednesday against Sporting Kansas City.
Absolutely. And, of course, that's going to be a big matchup. Will that be over at PPL Park, or are you heading over to the new ground?
That's going to be at PPL Park, yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, though, PPL Park has been a pretty good place for the Philadelphia Union ever since it got built last and ready for last year. How confident has the club been at their new ground for, you have to say probably right now a season and a half?
We haven't lost too many games there. I think we had three losses there last year. This year we haven't, I think all the losses have been on the road. So, it's been a nice fortress so far. I think any team that's pretty much come in has said they really appreciate, not say appreciate, but they like playing there because, it's a pretty much somewhat hostile environment, especially where the two teams come out, like right underneath the supporter section where the Suns of Ben sit. And, it's been a real fortress so far. So, and of course, they're talking about expanding it in three different phases over the next few years, which, should be even better. So far, ain't no place like home. So.
No, absolutely. Let me tell you something. I was a little shocked when they were finished with PPL Park that it was only basically 3-4 sections. I didn't understand. I thought it was going to be at least a little over 20,000. I thought maybe there was going to be an upper deck somewhere, but I guess there were some budget cuts or something that decided to wait for, I guess, the right time to build those upper decks. For the park, which I think would be fantastic. I think if you just have to make it like a U-shape, you probably keep that picturesque view of the Delaware River right behind the supporters section where the Sons of Ben are.
Right, right. I think because the original plan, like before the team was announced, and the original plan for the whole area was supposed to get redeveloped. Now it's supposed to be like the crown jewel for like the complete redevelopment of Chester. Now, I guess apart from the stadium, nothing else was really built on that whole development. So I think because of budget cuts, like you said, they had to cut it down. Right now, all seating-wise is 18,500. They can have, another 1,000 standing. But about the actual increase in the capacity in three different phases, I think, first of all, they're going to increase it in the next 2 or 3 years up to 20,000. I think that's going to be at the Sons of Ben section. Now, the problem is, like you said, we're going to lose that view the waterfront, which is quite amazing, really. I'm not really too fussed with that, but that's been one of the complaints. But that was going to be one phase. The second phase was, I think, was going to be the two main stands were going to be built up, like you said, and then where the scoreboard is on the other goal, eventually phase three, that was going to be increased. But they reckon by phase three that they capacity might be around 30,000. But the other thing with that was Villanova football team was also talking about potentially playing there when it was 30,000. So we'll see what happens there. So I like how they're slowly trying to increase it just phase by phase.
Honestly, I think Villanova should just build their own stadium instead of moving into a different stadium that's made for soccer, not for NFL or college football, in my opinion.
Oh, I completely agree. And isn't that the whole reason why MLS clubs are starting building their own stadiums? Was because they don't want to have like the football lines in the field, and they want to have, you know, play on torn up fields. I thought that was the whole reason. I mean, listen, it's a money maker, absolutely. But like I said, you know, I mean, the purists out there, you know, don't want to see, you know, any football lines on there. I know that's something that the Houston Dynamo is going to have to, I guess, work with when their new stadium opens up, because they're sharing with a university, I think. I can't remember which school it was now, but they're sharing with a football team down there when their stadium opens up. But and I've seen a few on the pitch on Crew Stadium, and I think Pizza Hut Park as well. I'm not sure if high school teams play there or what, but it's, you know, it's not why the stadiums were meant to be built in the first place.
No, it's not. It definitely isn't. But let me ask you this question here, because apparently I understand that after the draw between Union and RSL, apparently Novak refused to shake Jason Price's hand. What happened?
Oh, wow. I think it was – I'm not sure, but I believe it was over the goal. Because when the goal happened, I was one of the, you know, the many screaming fans, but I was screaming because the referee had the whistle in his mouth as if he was going to blow for a foul on, I think it was – if I'm not mistaken, it was maybe Brian Carroll. I can't remember who it was. Somebody got fouled. No, it was Farfan. It was Farfan. He thought he was fouled, and he wasn't. And to be fair to RSL, they played to the whistle, and the Union obviously didn't. Well, they went down the other end, and the Spindler, the only shot he had on goal, goes in the back of the net. Now, I believe it had something to do with that. I could be wrong. But I mean, as far as I know, there was never any animosity towards Novak or Jason Christ. I know Jason Christ definitely said he liked PPL Park, and he thought Novak and the Union were doing a great job. At least that was his comments last year. But I believe it might have been towards the goal. But the officiating that day wasn't very good, and hasn't been very good in most games this season for everybody. You know, to be honest, we all know that.
Exactly. I mean, I can contest to last night as well. That was really. Last night was absolutely for the Red Bulls and Timbers. It was a very poor officiating match, but still.
I agree.
Yeah, but how has this roster been so far? I mean, obviously last year was a lot of growing pains with the Union. Obviously, it's a very brand new club coming in, Major League Soccer and everything. How has this roster been? Because I know you got the Farfan brothers on both sides on the defensive line. How have they been so far?
They've been very, very good. I think I was kind of hoping the one Farfan brother, I always get them mixed up, but the one was taking the place of, I believe it was Jordan Harvey, when Harvey was suspended one game, and I thought he actually played a lot better than Harvey did. Now, Harvey obviously has a lot more, you know, experience, but these Farfan brothers seem very good.
Why don't you pick up the phone?
Still there?
No, I'm still here. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. I was going to say, the Farfan brothers both seem very, very good technical players, very good on the ball, very good passers. I know one of them actually was on the books of Club America on the youth system at one time. I think it was the midfielder. And they perform very well. They've been very, very good. As for the roster in general, I mean, it's... Like I said, with Peter Novak, sometimes I really do question why he plays some of the players that he does. I mean, I personally don't see anything in Kyle Nakazawa. Like I said, he's supposed to be a P specialist, and he hasn't really been like that, in my opinion. He hasn't really, you know, put in that many good free kicks or corners. I think we just recently signed this Croatian who is... He had like seven different clubs, I think, in La Liga. He hasn't played in 3 years. Part of it, that's right, yeah. And he started on the weekend. And I'm also wondering why he signed him if he hasn't played in 3 years. I mean, some of the decisions are really puzzling me. We definitely need more help on the flanks. It was clearly last year because Fred wasn't good enough, so he was let go. We definitely do need some more players with flair. Justin Mapp shows up on some days and he's... Other days he doesn't. He doesn't seem he's, you know, wants to play all that much.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Sebastian Latou hasn't. I mean, he'll still run all day for you, but his form hasn't been very good this year. And the players that seem to make things happen are both coming off the bench. And that's Dami Mwanga and Roger Torres. Now, why they don't play 90 minutes instead, I honestly don't know. Maybe Torres doesn't play 90 minutes because of his lack of height and his weight. He's a bit small. I don't know. But Mwanga, I think, definitely gives them another dimension up front. Yeah, he doesn't play unless if, like, Carlos Ruiz is, you know, off playing for Guatemala like he has been. But
why has Peter Novak lost faith in Mwanga and Roger Torres?
Yeah, I'm not so sure if he's just lost faith. I just don't believe he thinks they're 90-minute players, to be honest. I mean, every time when, you know, if we're losing by a goal or, you know, the score is 11 and we're at home, he's always bringing on Roger Torres and Daniel Wang in the second half. Now, honestly, there was a head scratch when we signed Carlos Ruiz because I never really liked him as a player, obviously, I'm thinking to myself, why is he playing so much? And then, of course, he scores that brilliant goal against Chicago, you know, out of nothing. So I guess he is, you know, that's why he's in there. But, I mean, the thing is, Mwanga and Torres are both 19 years old, and they're both second-year players, and they're still very, very young yet. So maybe he's trying to bleed them in slowly. But every time they've come on, they've made things happen. And I just, for some reason, I don't see why they're not getting 90 minutes, consistently.
Yeah, I guess so. But, Mwanga, I know he's a hardworking player. He always was able to find the seams to cut across the defenders and just score that goal, waiting for the defense to make an error, and he's right there to pick up the trash and puts it home.
Well, right, and that's exactly what happened, actually, against the New York Red Bulls when they both came on in the second half. You know, but they both, you know, basically, you know, well, Torres got the goal, but Mwanga got the assist when Tim Reid made that mistake. And, you know, that's what I personally think is replaying every, you know, they should be starting every game, but I'm not sure what Novak's planning is there. We've been doing all right so far. I mean, you know, it was only the fourth loss of the season yesterday, but, you know, we're doing all right so far, so I guess, you know, mm-hmm. I can't be doing too much wrong.
Absolutely.
Easy for me to criticize on the outside.
Well, very true. But then again, you know, you are in the stands. You do watch every single match. I don't know if you know this or not, but Popovic actually came to the Red Bulls in 2009 on a trial, and apparently whatever deal that they were going to give him, he didn't take it, so he left. And he decided to retire.
Oh, he was actually offered a deal with the Red Bulls? I heard he trialed, but I don't think – I think it was Osorio who was there at the time.
Osorio that was there at the time, yep.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't realize he was actually offered a deal. Actually, I heard he retired for 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
Which is why I'm so surprised Novak took him up and then signed him.
Maybe he knows him very well.
He could very well do. I mean, I don't think he's. I'm just trying to think. I think he's played his whole career besides Croatia. I think it was in Spain. But he went to, like I said, he went to like 7 clubs in Spain. I think he was last a youth team coach at Atletico Madrid. I could be wrong, but like I said, it was a head scratcher. Him, you know. Signing him, but you know he's more than welcome to prove me wrong. And if he does, I'll gladly hold my hand up and say, you know, I was wrong.
Definitely. Well, listen, you know, you never know. Maybe he'll he'll surprise you, and maybe who knows? Maybe Popovic will put in a couple of goals and give Philadelphia the boost they needed, because right now they're only a point behind the Red Bulls, and they're going to have a match on Thursday night over in Seattle as they stay in the Northwest. Jeff, listen, thanks for coming on to discuss Philadelphia. Good luck with the rest of the season, and whenever you're ready to come back on, I'll let you know.
Thank you, sir. Actually, I have one question for you. What happened to Richie Williams? I know they gave the reason, but I don't somehow believe that, because he was the best assistant in the MLS, I thought.
I have no idea. No one knows what's going on with that one. No one knows, to be honest with you.
Okay. I was hoping Novak was going to snatch him up, you know, from one of his assistants, and he didn't.
Well, to be honest with you, any MLS club that you know is going to hire a second assistant coach, you know, he's a valuable person. Might as well go ahead and get him.
Absolutely. That's why I was so shocked he was let go.
Yeah, same here. Believe me, no one was more shocked than I was, I'll tell you that much. Jeff, thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Okay, my friend. Thank you.
No problem. Take care. That's Jeff Reed, ladies and gentlemen. Philadelphia Union supporter coming on the show. It took him a while to recover from that big CONCACAF Champions League final loss against Monterrey, but Chris Enger is on with us, of course, hosting the RSL show
Chris, welcome back to the a regular show. How's it going? And is everyone in Salt Lake feeling better?
Well, I think we'll start feeling a little bit more, a little bit better once our team starts finding its form again. It's still lacking a lot in the attacking third. It's missing out. There's no real playmaker right now still, and it shows by the lack of goals scored and the lack of points here with all these games in hand.
I gotta say though, you know, following the Gold Cup, and I know Will Johnson, who played for the Canadian national team in this Gold Cup. I know how important he is to RSL, just as Dwayne De Rosario is important to the Red Bulls. But my God, you're a cruel man. You're an absolutely cruel man, begging Canada to get eliminated so you can have Will Johnson back. My goodness, what has happened to you? You're so mild-mannered.
Well, I mean, if you watch the Columbus game, you clearly knew that there's one area that we couldn't have connection from our defense to our forwards. I mean, the whole game there was nothing but turnover after turnover after turnover. Will Johnson stops that. I mean, he's one of our best players. He's very unheralded. So sue me. I wanted him back playing for red and blue. All right.
I'll call my lawyer. No, I'm kidding. I'll make sure he's from Toronto. No.
No kidding. Hey, it's okay for them to lose. I mean, it's okay watching a rival lose, right? Every one of our U.S.'s rivals, I'm okay with them losing.
It's a plus. That's true. Yeah, it's a win-win situation for everybody. I know. That's the same old thing. But this is the thing, though. I never screamed for it with De Rosario. If it happened, fine. If it didn't, I can handle one more game. But, boy, good thing that Canada did lose, and you got your Canuck back, and we got our Canuck back. So that's okay. It's a wash.
Hey, Sabo missed two penalty kicks. We got him back this Saturday, too. I'm happy.
See? Does it really matter, though? Really? Honestly?
Well, yeah, true. He's in a serious funk right now. He is playing well at all. It's either age or he's in a serious funk, and I'm hoping it's the latter more than the former.
Exactly, definitely. But honestly, though, I mean, you were with me on that post-match show, the second leg post-match show on Forestine's Fire here. What was Salt Lake City and the suburbs like over in Utah after that match? I mean, how long did it really take for that town to, you know, collect their thoughts and get ready for league competition?
Well, we had to get right back into it with the Portland match. And, you know, we lost that one. We clearly were hungover for that match in the Valley. After the loss, that was one of the most talked about matches that I've ever been around. People who follow the sport and people who don't follow the sport, it was a very much talked about match. Then we lose to Portland. Then we play Chivas and Morales breaks his ankle. It's just been one thing after another since then. Then the Gold Cup call-ups. It's just, I can't wait till we start playing well again. So I dare say that the city's getting over it. I don't think the team has officially yet, but you lose a game of that magnitude. I mean, Espíndola, for starters, he called that the biggest match of his life, of his career. And he was a head case a couple of weeks after that, and it finally got it. He's finally come around. So it's, I don't know, the city, the team, we're still kind of in it. I hate to say that. I still think we're trying to get out of it.
Yeah. Well, I know for a fact that Espíndola, great goal against the Union. I just had Jeff Reed on, who's from Philadelphia, of course, that everyone was, you know, screaming about that over in Salt Lake. Novak refused to shake Jason Christ's hand at the end of the game. And, you know, they said there should have been a foul. They played to the whistle. I mean, great goal by Espíndola. I think Espíndola's, like you said, he's turned it around right now. He's looking a lot better for RSL. What do you think is just, he just decided to, like, okay, it's time to man up, time to get going?
Yeah, I think he's great. I think being out on the field finally helped out a little bit. And the first goal, like, was it again? I was against Philadelphia. Ever since they started, he scored two since then, right? So we need him more than anyone else on that field right now because he's the only one that can score. I don't trust Gene at all. Sorry, I don't trust Gene at all. I kind of thought it was a foul against Philadelphia, but I'll take it. But then karma strikes us in the butt, and Charlie Davies takes a dive. So, we're missing our quarterback. Our quarterback's still in a break, and it shows. We don't have any creativity in the middle third at all.
At all. So right now it's looking kind of tough for RSL to try to climb back into the West. And let me say this about the West. That is a really competitive conference right now. Western Conference, I mean, you've got the Galaxy in first. You got FC Dallas in second. Seattle's in third. I mean, you're basically about 10 points behind LA for the top spot. You're about 4 points behind Dallas and Seattle. And you're like at least a point behind the defending cup champion Colorado Rapids, but technically you're in the wild card area, which means you can still make the playoffs.
Well, I don't think we'll not make the playoffs. We have so many games in hand that I think we'll get results out of most of them to at least make a playoff spot. I just think we're losing grip of the supporter shield. We have six games in hand on LA, six or five. I know we have three or four against Dallas, and so all those games in hand just throw us for a loop. You can't. It's hard to see. What team's close just by, you have to go off points per game, and we're right around the top right there still. But the West is just always stacked this year. From top to bottom, each team is going to be tough. Our critical stretches right now, over the next, I think, 12 games, 10 of them or 9 of them are against teams that are 500 or lower, and most of those are at home. If we don't come away, if we're at near the top of that stretch, then I'll really be worried.
Yeah,
so, I mean it's these games like we won against DC where I don't know, we should have come away with 3 points. We could have easily lost all 3 points because Pontius hit the woodwork twice during that match, and
right.
Then to have a draw like that at the end of the game with a questionable penalty kick. That's, I don't know. These are the kind of games that just drive me crazy because that's 2 points we just lost from home.
Absolutely, and of course. If you want to talk about promoting the team, you've got ESPN Radio 700 in Salt Lake. There now, it looks like they have a permanent Salt Lake RSL segments on the radio. You got KMYU, which is one of those My Network channels. There looks like they're broadcasting all the games this year. Is this going to be a permanent thing? Hopefully for Salt Lake, because I know there's been. If it's not the local CBS channel. It's hopefully one of those local independent My Network or CW channels.
Yeah, I think it's going to be long term. I mean, the bigger games they'll put on the CBS, they'll actually put on the CBS affiliate locally. But the great thing is, even with the direct kick, if it's a local game, we'll still get it on Match Day Live and not have it be blocked out, so we can watch it that way as well. I think it'll be long term. I think CBS, the local affiliate, likes having the games on TV. I think they do fairly well. But call is the best. KAL 700, ESPN 700. They give RSL a ton of coverage. It also helps that the owner's son is one of the talk show hosts, so they talk about it quite a bit. Plus, the play-by-play guy is the other co-host. So we get a lot of great coverage. Plus, the Tribune and Des News writers, they're also awesome as well.
Of course.
We get a lot of coverage down here, which is fantastic.
Well, of course, Michael C. Lewis for the Tribune. I mean, obviously, he's been there probably since day one. So, obviously, you got to give him a lot of credit as well.
Oh, yeah. No, the good thing is he's, like myself, never really followed the game until RSL hit the town, and now he's also a soccer convert. It's just, once you start watching the game more, the more you convert, the more you love the game.
Absolutely. So let's see here. After you face the Chicago Fire on the road at Toyota Park, and then you come home, Toronto FC on Saturday, and then on the 28th, RSL is in the U.S. Open Cup, and you're going to be hosting the winners of round two, either the Wilmington Hammerheads or the Charlotte Eagles. Is this the very first Open Cup match that's been hosted by RSL, or there's been before?
No, as far as official Open Cup matches, this is the first time we've hosted one. Usually we've hosted a couple of the playing games, but we've been on the road for the actual matches. So, hopefully they can hype it up because, I mean, they're offering $5 tickets to anyone who wants to go. I mean, they're trying to get that as many fans there as they can. And it's look at that stretch. Chicago, bottom tier. Toronto, bottom tier. And then, of course, a second, third division team. we should come away with 6 points and a progress in the U.S. Open Cup. That's, I mean, we have. If you don't come away with those types of results, that's just going to weigh more on the pressure these guys are feeling. It's just. I'm very stressed out about this whole thing right now.
Are you really?
Oh, it's to come away with a lackadaisical result against DC United. That's not a good start for the stretch. This is a critical stretch. This is where we start playing our games in hand. This is where we start needing to make up ground with FC Dallas, LA, Colorado. This is our critical stretch. If we don't do well this next batch of games, mm-hmm. then I'm worried about where we end up in the playoffs.
I have to ask you this question because obviously you had the Utah Blitz in the original USL Second Division, what was then called D3 Pro League. And they did win the championship back then before RSL came into existence in Major League Soccer. How much are you aware of with the Wilmington Hammerheads and the Charlotte Eagles of USL Pro Division?
That's an excellent question. I did not follow the Blitz soccer. Like I said, I became more of a soccer convert the first RSL home game. So I didn't follow any of the local soccer news at all until 2005. So I couldn't answer it for you. I'm going to look into it over the next week before we do our show next week. But, yeah, I can't. It's a horrible for me not to know, Daniel. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. You know, it's your fault, and I have to come and save the day.
Very nice. That's what friends are for.
Good reply. 1 point.
Yes.
No, but seriously, I mean, we all saw how Salt Lake was very big and was very big into the CONCACAF Champions League. Obviously, international cup competitions will always trump domestic cup competitions. It's always great to win the league. And, of course, if you win the league, you go into the CONCACAF Champions League automatically in the group stage. Here, if you have a strong Open Cup run, obviously you're going to enter into the qualifying round. That is if you find a way to get all the way into the MLS Cup final again. But then again, that's remaining to be seen. We don't know what's going to happen in a couple of months from now. But mm-hmm. but if you ask anyone in the Salt Lake City area and the suburbs, if you ask them about the U.S. Open Cup, how serious are the RSL supporters about this?
Trophies not friendlies, my friend. Trophies not friendlies. Very important. There's three ways to get into the CCL, and we want to try and qualify all three ways if we can. To the fans, to the supporters, those who follow the team, it's a big game because it just helps us progress towards our goal, ultimate goal, which is to get it back into number one, to get a trophy, number two, to get back in the Champions League.
Very, very true. And, of course, I'm a big proponent of the U.S. Open Cup. And, of course, if anyone is curious to know where they can find coverage of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, of course, that website is thecup.us. There will be a running chat. Live chat going on. I know they've got links for either internet radio streams or hopefully you can catch some live video streams of these matches. 8 matches going on in round 2. That'll be tomorrow night, June 21st, obviously starting in the New York City area in Queens with the New York Pennsylvania Freedoms taking on FC New York. And, of course, what everyone in Utah will be waiting for will be the winner of the Wilmington Hammerheads against the Charlotte Eagles. Both do play in USL Pro. I guess, finally, I understand that Javier Morales' injury was not as horrible as many thought it would be. Do you think there's an opportunity for him to come back with a couple of matches left in the regular season before the playoffs?
That's what the doctor is saying. The doctor said that. Javi's trying to train for that. I mean, he's not training. He's still in his boot right now. He's trying to heal for it. But that's what the doctor said. He did so much on the field that it was able to do get the progress a lot farther in the medical room to make it easier for Javi. So the doctor, he said this a couple weeks ago. The doctor came on a call, ESPN call, and said he's likely to be back the last couple of games and into the playoffs, which would be awesome. I'm hoping for that. I'm not counting on it. Because, I mean, if you've seen the pictures, I don't know how you can come back with that so quickly. But
yeah.
If he's back, he's back. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. Chris, thanks a lot. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to follow Real Salt Lake, there's always the RSL show. Follow Chris on Twitter at RSL, at RSL show. I know he does a great job with his co-hosts, including with Mr. John Colloder, who's the communications officer of the RSL side. Chris, enjoy the rest of the time. Take it easy, my friend.
Okay, thank you very much, and we'll chat later. Thank you very much
all right,
again.
Definitely. No problem at all.
Bye-bye.
That's once again Chris Enger, RSL show. Of course, now we're in the North American Soccer League segment, waiting for Mr. Ignacio Rodriguez to come on the show. And hopefully he's going to come on. We're going to discuss some strikers. We're going to discuss some interesting stuff going on. And, of course, once again, congratulations to the Canadian capital of Ottawa as they will be joining the United Soccer Leagues as an expansion side. Where it's going, what year, I believe it'll either be next year or the year after. But one thing is for sure, ladies and gentlemen, seeing Ottawa coming in with the NASL, hopefully that will make the league better, stronger. And as always, the NASL looking strong. And I understand from Mr. Dan Wolf they'll be called the Fury. Hopefully that is the truth, and they'll be playing over at Lansdowne Field. And we will definitely love, I would definitely, definitely would love to see the NASL become bigger and better, not just for U.S., not just for the U.S. Second Division, but of course also for Canadian soccer in Second Division. That will always be bigger and better. And joining me on the line, Mr. Fort Lauderdale striker, aficionado, the man who has the plan, my good friend Ignacio Rodriguez. Ignacio, how are you?
I don't know what plan you're talking about. I would love to see it, though.
Well, don't you know? You send me the plans all the time on email.
All the time. What's up, Danny? How you feeling?
I'm doing good, man. How's it going?
Another day in the life, sir.
Yes, sir. Another day in the life. And I got to say, congratulations with Ottawa coming into the NASL. I believe they're coming in, is it for next year or in 2 years?
2 years. Ottawa's coming in 2013. We're really excited for San Antonio and everything they're doing down in Texas. They're coming in next year. They're going to replace Montreal. And they have a really, really strong ownership group, and they have the right people in place. And you know, I'm really excited for that step to be taken, and then Ottawa.
Absolutely. And, of course, I don't know if you know this or not, but the winning jersey worn by Jorge Campos, I picked that one.
Did you really?
I'm telling the truth. I felt that the thin hoop stripes were perfect. I felt you need a little more of a character in a shirt like that, and I went with it.
No, and very cool what they did in San Antonio, incorporating the fans. The fans had a say in the jersey and the name. They're going to have a really cool stadium coming up soon. And no, they have all the right pieces in place. And, you know, they're all pieces that kind of fit Division II soccer, you know, finding your niche, rallying your community behind the team. And there's a lot of markets that want soccer. And I think, you know, us as an ASL, we're doing a good job of identifying those markets and identifying the people. You know, most importantly, and you know, getting all the right people in place. So I think big things are going to come from the league.
No, that's great. That's absolutely fantastic. Quickly, let's talk about the strikers here. Now, looking at the table for the NASL, currently you're in the middle of the pack with Puerto Rico. Currently you're 2 points behind Puerto Rico. Carolina Railhawks has somehow found a way to streak straight up to the top of the table with 31 points. Currently a lot of draws, but you do have 3 wins, and it's not bad. You only have 2 losses. I mean, basically, you could be Atlanta right now, but I think Fort Lauderdale, it looks like you've had a pretty good season so far. And, of course, that great venue, Lockhart Stadium, finally being there during the preseason for that for myself, obviously.
No, and I think the thing that the stats don't necessarily say is we're playing our best soccer right now. We just had a 3-game homestand. We were undefeated in our 3-game homestand. We stumbled out of the gates a little bit with Montreal, but We fought back. We beat Puerto Rico. We were down 2-1. We found a way to win in the last minute. I think that was kind of a turning corner for us as a team, and you saw the team kind of fight back. And for the first time in a long time in South Florida, you see the crowd getting into it and the crowd kind of lifting the team over the hump. And we saw it a little bit in the beginning of the season with the late goal by Chacho Caudet. We saw it now with a late header to win the game and beat Puerto Rico 3-2 at Lockhart. And then we went and we had a convincing win against Minnesota, and we just traveled to Montreal and fought and clawed and got a draw. So I think coach is doing a good job, and all the pieces seem to be coming into place. And the young players, more than anything, are contributing. Brian Shriver scoring 2 goals, Josie Marsh scoring his first goal. And I think the key factor for us that hasn't really been talked about too much is Christian Arrieta has really come in and kind of solidified that back line and moving forward up on that right flank. He's a very dangerous player. So I think all those pieces kind of coming into place, you know, during the homestand, and now the team has confidence going forward. And I'm excited. I'm excited for this Saturday. We play Puerto Rico again, and we play Tampa twice in 5 days, once at home and once away, July 4th at Anaheim Stadium. They're doing a great job over there with Light the Bay, and it's exciting stuff in Strikers camp.
Absolutely. I can definitely hear it in the sound of your voice. Of course, it doesn't hurt to have a couple of former MLSers being on the Strikers, like Yoxmar Granado of Chicago Fire, Aaron Holbein, originally of the Kansas City Wizards, now of course Sporting Kansas City, Brian Arguez of DC United. You also have Mike Palacio, former Red Bull backup. And, of course, the ever-popular, and, of course, I've always been I miss him a little bit. He used to play for the Red Bulls until he went to Europe, and then he went to San Jose, Mr. Jean-Philippe Peguero.
Yeah, the resurgence of Peguero, absolutely. Peguero has been great, kind of helping us while we overcome some injuries, you know, being that big target forward. And he scored in that goal against Puerto Rico. He was actually the one that scored the last-minute goal, and you know, there's a lot of talent on the team. There's a lot of depth on the team, and we stumbled out of the gates a little bit. I think our fans were a tad bit worried, but Daryl, you know, Coach Shore has all his troops doing what they need to do. And more than anything, you know, we always try to play a brand of soccer that's entertaining, a brand of soccer that's on the ground. That's
how
do
you pick it up,
forward.
Please? Yep.
So I think the brand of soccer is entertaining, and I think people like watching the team, and the games are exciting, and you know what Tim has done with the team and bringing the fan experience component, and we have an excellent tailgate, and we have a cool parade with the youth club coming, you know, into Lockhart. They parade into Lockhart, then the supporters group parades in, and now we're developing a tradition where the fans, you know, literally run up to the fence line and hug, you know, the players hug the fans. I don't know anywhere else in the world, in the world of soccer, where you can get that close to the fans, where literally a 3-foot fence separates, you know, South Florida United and the fans. And I think that's a cool little tradition. And we got something special brewing down here in South Florida, and I'm just really happy to be a part of it.
I have to ask you this question. What did, of course, the club was originally called Miami FC when you were originally with the USL, and then, of course, well, when everything became NASL and stuff like that. What did Fort Lauderdale see in head coach Daryl Shore that made them think that this is the man to bring the club into a positive string of victories, or at least a good winning mentality for this club and area?
Well, I think the first thing you got to talk about is mentality. You know, Victor Pastore was our coach before Daryl, and Zinho, the great midfielder from Brazil, was our coach for a long time, and I'm not going to lie, I think that, you know, especially Zinho was a little bit more in line with the South American mentality, the you get the ball, you turn, you have some space. But our brand of soccer in the United States is very physical, and we went out and we got a guy with a lot of MLS experience and a guy who knows how to bring it. I think having Jim Rooney as his assistant, a longtime Fusion player, captain of the Fusion back in the day, helps a lot too. And I think that combination with having a field where we can practice and having a better facility and scouting with time and having a preseason, I think has all kind of come together. And Daryl's a good coach. Daryl X's and O's, you know, knows what he wants. And like I said, it's not anti-football. It's not defensive football. Let's try to kick the ball forward and catch it and score somehow. It's on the ground, and we have width, and we play up the middle, and we have players that know how to be on the ball. So I think all those components help, but more than anything, I think Daryl has the experience and the mentality to push this team forward. And it's about a championship for us. We want to go. You hear the coach talk, and he talks about we need 3 points at home and we need points away. Whether it's 3 points or 1 point away, it doesn't matter. So I think instilling that mentality in the players of the standard and the expectation of this club has really helped it kind of overcome the humps that Miami FC kind of stumbled upon originally. But there's still a lot of season left, so there's still a lot of season. The season just started, so there's the summer days here for us, the dog days of summer here for us, and we got some difficult games on the road, and you know, but I feel good about the team, and like I said, I love the brand. The brand moves forward. The brand looks to score. We outscore our opponents in that home stand 6-2. So you know, we're putting the goals in the back of the net, and you know, our goalkeeper leads the league in goals against average. So I think everything's coming together.
Now, obviously, I understand there's a rivalry game coming up with the Strikers and FC Tampa Bay. Is it creeping very closely? Is it this weekend, this midweek? When is it going to happen?
Absolutely not. Everybody has a huge circle around that day. June 29th, Wednesday, Tampa Bay, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, the first edition of the reincarnation. There was a lot of people here for the original match day that got rained out. There was a big bus from Tampa that came down, and we had one of our better attendants in the stadium, even with the storm kind of brewing around South Florida. But it's a real rivalry. It's not a plastic rivalry. You know, the front offices, the fans, the players, the coaches, it's real. It's something that has history. It's something that has tradition, and I'm just excited. I mean, obviously I love all the games, but there's just games that you know that are going to be epic games, and I think the series with Tampa this year is going to be a real dogfight.
I think so, too. I have a good feeling that the Florida Derby is really going to be exciting, and I can't wait to get a chance to try and take a look at the next match. And, of course, for those of you that are not aware of this, my good friend Ignacio Rodriguez, this gentleman got himself a pretty cushy part-time job, and that is calling the CONCACAF Gold Cup matches for CONCACAF TV. And you can only do that if you register with the CONCACAF website. Ignacio, how was it? Did you have to travel, or was it in a studio? How did you do this? And who's your partner?
The funny you bring that up, I'm actually partnered up with a good friend of mine, Juan Arango, that works over at Gold TV. And not only that, a role model of mine, someone that I dearly look up to, and he gets uncomfortable when I have these kinds of conversations with him. But in my opinion, the absolute best play-by-play guy in English in North America, the great Phil Shane. Doing with games with him is sometimes you get kind of caught up because you just watch him master his craft, but it's been amazing. There's been some great games. I mean, there's been a couple blowouts, but a lot of fun, man, a lot of fun. You get the three of us in a room, and, you know, if anything, we're guaranteed to have fun. So excellent experience, and once again, I want to start a campaign to somehow get Phil the recognition he deserves, because I'm sure you know it too. There's nobody in North America that could call a game like Phil Shane.
Absolutely, and of course, it was fantastic when the USA Mexico World Cup qualifier for 2010, when it was down in Mexico City, understanding, thank God I had the MUN 2 channel that I could actually watch the game in English.
Marcelo Balboa
and Phil Shane. It was such a pleasure, such a pleasure to have Phil Shane calling a USA game again. I felt like I was back in the early years of MLS when Phil Shane used to work for ESPN calling MLS games and U.S. national team games.
No, he's so good, and like I said, sometimes you get caught kind of watching him do his thing. And look, it's awesome. I love being a part of Gold Cup. I ran the Gold Cup press box here at FIU Stadium. I got to watch some great soccer. You and I talked a little bit about the United States and what they've done so far. But,
absolutely.
You know, I love Gold Cup. Gold Cup is so fun, and, like, you know. What else can I say, man? I'm a very lucky guy. I'm living the dream. I'm not whining or anything. It's every time I go to work, it's really fun. And like I said, get to hang out with Phil Shane for 4 hours. Who doesn't have fun?
Exactly. See, you're one of the lucky ones. I'm even lucky when I have him on my show. So we're both in heaven whenever we get Phil Shane. Ignacio, good luck with the Strikers for the rest of the year. Good luck with the NASL. Good luck with the new opponent in Ottawa in 2 years. Have a good night, my friend, and I'll speak to you soon.
All right. Thanks very much, Stan.
No problem at all. Of course, that's my good friend Ignacio Rodriguez with head communications officer of the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, good guy all around, and probably him and Carter Krishnar are one of the best tandems of good guys for this NASL. The NASL is lucky to have not just Ignacio with the Strikers, but also helping out the NASL, but Carter Krishnar as well, doing everything he can to make sure that the NASL does do everything correct. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are here in the Red Bull Hour. My God, what a crazy, crazy, nutty, what the hell happened last night match. I have no idea what happened. I have no explanation why it happened like that. I don't even know why it came down like that. But I'm telling you right now, oh my God, what the heck in Dodge happened in Portland? I'm telling you, I have no idea what the heck happened in Portland. Seriously, no idea whatsoever. I could not believe what was going on in the second half of this match. Let me tell you what happened in the first half, and it's very simple. Red Bulls controlled the entire first half. You could also tell that Portland was not playing their typical type of game. There was no pressure. There was nothing going on over there. It just did not look like it was going to be anything from the Timbers. Of course, John Spencer was suspended for this match, and I think he suspended one more game because he criticized the officials. And to be fair here, the officials of U.S. Soccer, the on-field officials, deserve to be criticized because so far they have been below standard. They have been below par. It's been terrible. If you don't know what's a dive, then you shouldn't be calling for the penalties. Plain and simple. It was absolutely, I could not believe this. I could not believe what I saw. I could not believe what the heck was going on. And I'm telling you right now, I'm going to try and explain it to you as much as I can, because even I'm still confused of what was going on. And this is the situation, obviously. Once again, first half got started. Fifth-minute goal by Austin Deleuze, his first Major League Soccer goal, and it was a fantastic goal from him. He was cool, comfortable, compact, and he found a way to blast it past Troy Perkins in the net. That made it 1-0. He started the play by giving the ball to Henry, who quickly found Dwayne De Rosario on the near side of the field and along the area. As soon as D-Robe got near the area and near the end line, he made a quick cross, low ball, diagonal pass, which was looking to be towards Thierry Henry, but he dummied it and allowed Austin Deleuze to take the shot. He collected with one touch, got inside the area and bombed it and hit the inside, the near post, and in. 1-0 Red Bulls. They completely controlled the first half, and it looked like we're going to see more of that in the second. And then all of a sudden, the second half, something probably switched on in the locker room at Gerald Winfield, because let me tell you something right now. That was the strangest second half I have ever seen from this Red Bull side. Apparently, they couldn't handle set pieces, and around the 48th minute, Jeremy Hall, and think about this as well before I even get to the goal, you have Kevin Goldthwait, Eric Brunner, Jeremy Hall, three members of the Red Bulls, either from the starting 11, from the A string club, or from the draft or from the academy of Red Bull, that basically was a part of two of the three goals, because Jeremy Hall threw the ball in from the far side back into play. It was headed towards the Red Bulls goal. Jan Gunnar Solé in the 48th minute, he tried to clear it out with his head, but the clearance wasn't good enough, and it somehow found Jack Jewsbury, who ripped it in, leveled it one. Next minute, Jack Jewsbury is a set piece, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Eric Brunner heads it down, and Kevin Goldthwait pulls a Lionel Messi, and it's a back heel flick past Sutton, who didn't even play the ball well, and it's 2-1 Timbers, and then you're thinking to yourself, okay, they got to calm down. They got to get back into the match. You're down by a goal. It's not that bad. It's not that big of a deal. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, Stephen Keel, who used to play for the Portland Timbers when he was a member of their USL sides, when they used to share the stadium with the baseball team, the old Portland Beavers, which I understand they're not there anymore. They moved, the organization moved somewhere else. But still, he tracked back because Jorge Perlaza was on sides on the cross, and he tried to cross the ball in the middle of the field, but unfortunately, Keel, who was trying to deflect the ball away from the net, he puts in an own goal in the 68th minute, and that made it 3-1 Timbers. And if you're a Red Bull supporter, you thought that's game over. There's no way they're coming back. I mean, there's still some time left, but you don't know if they're going to find a way to at least pull one back. But boy, did they ever. Did they ever, and it was Thierry Henry who did a couple of give and goes. I think he did one with Wendy Rosario and he got it back. And then he did another give and go with Austin Deleuze in the 73rd minute, gave it back, and he got it back from Deleuze. And then all Thierry Henry had to do was just bomb it, and he did. 3-2 Red Bulls, beats Troy Perkins on the far upper 90. And then you get into stoppage time, and the strangest things have happened, and I didn't understand why. And it was weird. I mean, but even before stoppage time, let me say this, and if anyone is from Portland, anyone that listened to me during the Mouse football show, let me just say to the guys at the Mouse football show, thank you for having me on. I really do appreciate being on the show, giving the New York side of things. Let me say this. Your goals were earned. Your goals were earned. I have no problems with it. The goals were earned. Everything was fine. How many times did the Red Bulls get called for fouls, or at least in situations where it really wasn't a foul? And how many times did the Timbers not get called for a foul? I mean, it was really strange, and it was terrible. Terrible officiating in the second half. I just didn't understand what the heck was going on. It really, really got me upset a bit because, listen, I try not to harass the referees. I don't want to be seen as a referee whiner. I really don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be looked at as, oh, look, they're not doing it for the Red Bulls. Look at this. Don't you cry. Don't you whine. But that's not the point. The point is that you're expecting to see a well-officiated match. And Ricardo Salazar is supposed to be one of those top officials in MLS, or supposedly he is. And I really, really should not say MLS because basically all referees are assigned and paid for by the U.S. Soccer Federation. So basically these are U.S. soccer referees. So that's what the situation is. But at the same time, it's just ridiculous. How many times are we going to see a foul against the Red Bulls when it's barely a foul? And maybe where it should be a foul on Portland, there's nothing being called. It was absolutely ridiculous. Or at least there's got to be some form of evenness going on, not counting what happened at the end in the second half stoppage time, but the way the game was played, it was ridiculous. You know? It was just absolutely ridiculous. I've never seen such bad officiating like this by a referee that's supposed to be one of the best, one of the top referees in U.S. soccer. Baldomero Toledo is the worst referee in soccer. I can definitely guarantee you that. But Ricardo Salazar, I'm sorry. I mean, he just had a horrible, horrible game. I don't know what he was seeing in the second half. And then you get the second half stoppage time. And then all of a sudden, you see, I think, which was the worst of the worst. Now, granted, Adam Moffitt and Thierry Henry, they were talking to each other. It looked like that things got patched up. And Thierry Henry did nothing wrong at all. What? You're gonna card him for giving a love tap to the side of the head to Moffitt? I mean, he didn't smack him. He didn't give an elbow to the face. It's not like, here's the what for. It's just a little love tap on the back of the head. Fine, whatever. Moffitt did not like it, so he shoves Henry. All right, there's a little bit of a tussle here. Not so much of a tussle, but there's a little bit of arguing going on. They're both working it out. It looks like they worked it out on themselves. Referee does not need to be there. And then all of a sudden you see the shot where Salazar is talking to his near side assistant. And then all of a sudden, nothing happened. You know, nothing happened. And all of a sudden, Henry, straight red, Moffitt, yellow. What? Excuse me? Straight red for Thierry Henry for what? Because of the two love taps on the back of Moffitt's head? That's a red card? Look, if you want to say yellow, yellow, I'm fine. If you want to go with, okay, Henry is a yellow card, Moffitt's a yellow card, okay, or Salazar could have walked up and said, is everything okay here? Did you guys work it out? And they both could have said, yeah, we worked it out. Okay, fine. As long as you worked it out, I'm not gonna book you. But unfortunately, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. I just did not understand what the hell happened there. And of course, there was 4 minutes of stoppage time. And then through that whole argument, added 2 more minutes with the whole sending off and everything, which was really not a sending off. I don't know what's going on with the officiating. I don't know what's going on with the refereeing in MLS, but it was terrible. But then towards the end of the match, it looked like it was going to be over. Last-minute opportunity for the Red Bulls with the ball. Jan Gunnar Solé is running for it. He gets to the end line. He crosses it, and then all of a sudden, Rodney Wallace in the area. He got his arm out, and he handballed it. He handled the ball in the area. Salazar had no opportunity, no choice. He had to point to the spot. And who took the ball? But, of course, Dwayne De Rosario. He converts the penalty in the 6th minute of second half stoppage time. And then as soon as you kicked off at the middle of the park, Salazar blew his whistle. Match was over. Red Bulls pull out a magical 3-3 draw. Pulls a point out of the rear end. And they leave Portland with a point. Should Portland have won this match? Yes. Portland deserved to win. There's no doubt about it. They deserve to win. They should have won. I did not think the Red Bulls were going to pull out a third goal till they got the penalty. And to be fair here, the Timbers deserved 3 points. But because of the last-minute penalty, and it was a handball in the area, Red Bulls steal a point out of Portland. And out of all of this, Eric Soler, and this man is on the road with the club. He is on the bench with the club at Red Bull Arena. He travels for the road games, and he does not sit upstairs in the press box. He sits on the bench with the rest of the club. And, you know, he did not enjoy what he saw. You can tell he did not enjoy what he saw because he felt that probably this was the worst officiated game ever in MLS, and you never, ever saw Red Bull complain about the officiating. Earlier this afternoon, from the New York Red Bulls media relations, this story came out on their website today, this afternoon, and right now the supporters are praising Eric Soler for basically coming out and discussing his disgusted attitude. Yeah, I'm going to try and say that 5 times fast, about how this match was officiated. And this is an article, or sorry, coming from the Red Bulls Media Relations Department, from what Eric Soler has said. We have carefully reviewed the film of our match against Portland last night, and I can safely say that the level of refereeing was absolutely below the standards of what is required for an MLS match and completely unacceptable. First, the red card given to Thierry Henry was inexplicable. There was no violent conduct on his part whatsoever, and this decision was made by a linesman who was more than half a field away. Sorry about that, excuse me. Second, in any soccer game, there is no way that one team can draw 20 more fouls than the other team, especially in a match where one team drew just 5 fouls. I have never seen this occurrence in my 30 years in the game. We are aware that U.S. Soccer and MLS are working hard to improve the officiating in this country, and we support those efforts wholeheartedly. However,
If we want to continue increasing the level of play, we cannot let these types of refereeing performances occur. We look forward to speaking with the league to appeal Thierry's automatic red card suspension and expect that it will be rescinded so that he's available for our match Thursday in Seattle. Now, some have said that Henry might not play on Thursday because it's a second field turf match. And, of course, Henry, they're trying to save him for the rest of the match. Of course, that would be the last time they would play on field turf for the rest of the year. But still, though, you know, I don't really blame the Red Bulls for being this angry and this upset. Able to get some post-match comments, courtesy of MSG Network. And, of course, my friend Tina Savasio was able to get post-match comments. Here she is with head coach Hans Bakke.
Steve, Chef, thank you. Coach Bakke, you escaped Portland with a draw and have a smile on your face. How would you describe what happened in that second half?
I will perhaps talk a little bit about the first half. That was very comfortable, very composed, and we our shape was phenomenal, the way we defended, our breaks decent, so we looked we were very pleased at halftime. Then four sloppy minutes in the beginning, and it's just to be honest, it's we were not switched on. We talked to start the second half with a lot of possession, don't give away anything, sloppy defending against two set plays. We just need to do something different now with our set plays for the next game, because we can't have it like this. Every player has to take an individual responsibility for their actions, because them being 2-1 down, being 3-1 down. But once again, we responded well, and I think definitely we deserved a tie in this game, but we, of course, we could have lost it and got Thierry sent off. But overall, it's not an easy game. No games are easy in this league. But I felt the way we gave away the goals was disappointing.
Before, obviously, Henri had the red card, and he had that goal to close the deficit. How does that describe, or what do you see in his play, especially the last couple games?
Yes, I said it before the game. This is not his type of game or the type of play he normally plays, because he just needs to work now, work hard. And he has adjusted to that. Normally, he's a player that you will like to set up in the last third in the attacking game, so he can take players on scoring goals. But he's definitely contribute a lot to just the battle now when we are on the road.
I know you can't really speak of the officiating or anything like that, but what was your reaction when Henri was given the red card?
I can speak, but then I will get fined again. It's too much money for me, and it was enough last year, so... No, it's I don't think I've been involved in a game like this since 1979 when I started coaching. The free kicks are 28-6, and that I've never been involved in a game like that. Even ugly games, this is a pretty clear game. It's no rude tackles or anything. It's something is wrong. You never get 28-6 in free kicks against you.
I know the team was relieved with that victory over New England, but they've been frustrated in games before that with a couple of draws. What's the mood of the team right now after this result?
Yeah, I think they are pretty happy because we're unbeaten in six games. So that's good. That's a good streak. I think we can hope we can keep it up for the next two games on the road, and then we will get at least four players back from the Gold Cup. So a little bit disappointing, the goals we gave away. We should defend better, but I think... losing the first game on the road has been had been pretty poor mentality for these guys. But then get a late goal, a penalty, that helps a lot for the next game on Thursday against Seattle.
And that is Hans Bakke, head coach of the New York Red Bulls. Once again, post-match comments will be coming from Tina Servasio, courtesy of from MSG Network, who was at Portland last night. You know, this... I gotta say, this is probably one of the most strangest games I have ever seen, and it is one of the strangest games I've ever seen. I mean, my God, who would have thought this? Who would have thought this? I just don't understand how terrible the officiating has gotten in the MLS.
I mean, granted, there have been times where you can say, okay, that's a good referee, that's a bad referee. You never thought you'd see the on-field officials be this pathetic, this poor, this disgustingly terrible. Just don't understand what is going on here. I have maintained that maybe we need some of these European referees that are retired to probably come to U.S. soccer and to teach these referees what the heck is going on. Now, I understand that we have some retired officials of U.S. soccer that are no longer doing what they're doing. They're having these referee courses. I think there's a few referees that so far have been doing a good job. I understand one of them was when the Red Bulls host was at, on the road at the Galaxy. Janicevic, I think his last name was, but I could be wrong. I mean, out of all the referees I've seen, Janicevic, I thought, was probably the better referee because I thought he allowed the play to breed. He did not go foul crazy. Whenever a yellow card was warranted, he gave it. I just don't understand what has happened with American soccer referees. In my opinion, the American soccer referee has become, I think they've been bringing down the quality of play. And MLS, and you know, I know Major League Soccer is not happy with what's going on. Who knows? Maybe MLS might tell the U.S. Soccer that we're not going to take your referees anymore. We're going to build our own officiating crew. So that could happen. I don't know what's going to happen right now. I really believe that the officials in U.S. soccer, they need to be retrained. They need to be retrained about what they see as a legitimate foul and what they see as a non-foul that they have to just say play on. Let the game continue to be played. I don't know why, I don't know how, but it's happened so many times and all. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go over to Mr. Dwayne De Rosario, the man who got the game-tying penalty. And here he is right now with his thoughts with, once again, MSG Network's Tina Servacio.
All right, Steve, thank you. Dwayne, how would you describe this result?
It's frustrating, definitely. I mean, we did ever so well the first half. They put the pressure. The second half, we panicked. And we can't afford to do that. We gave up the one, okay, fine. But the second one, you know, again, going back to set pieces, we need to clean up. We need to be a diehard attitude back there. We have every guy, you know, we have great defenders, but we need to be a little more nasty when it comes to set pieces.
When you talk about those set pieces, what happened mentally with the team with breakdowns and throughout the second half? Because there were a lot of gaps at times.
Yeah, I think we went totally against our game plan. That we started off the first half. First half, we were compact, we were organized. They couldn't break us down. Okay, they got one goal, well-deserved, but we also we collapsed and lost our minds. They came back, scored very quickly, and then we kind of lost ourselves for majority of the second half. Luckily for, you know, a great finish by Henri, and we were able to get a penalty to get ourselves back into the game.
Henri had to leave the game with a red card. It was very chippy in the second half. How would you describe the mood on the field?
I mean, we need that mood for 90 minutes. That's the mood we need. If we need to compete against a team like this, cause that's one thing Portland does good. They're very direct. They battle. They scrap. And we need to add that element to our game. And if we get that, hopefully sooner or later, we'll be fine. Obviously not getting red cards and giving away silly fouls. But, you know, that's obviously something we need to clean up. But, you know, most importantly, happy we're able to get back in the game.
Dwayne, thank you.
That's Dwayne De Rosario, ladies and gentlemen, giving out his idea of what happened in the match and probably what went wrong. And glad to see that once again he was able to get that big penalty at the end of the match, and he was able to go on, get a point on the road, and now they're going to move on to face Seattle Sounders, and they'll be meeting Dane Richards over at Quest Field as the Jamaica got eliminated from Gold Cup competition, lost to the USA 2-0. So Dane Richards will be back depending on what happens with Thierry Henry, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see Dane in the midfield along with Lindpair back centrally. Deleuze, I think he will remain as the left flank midfield player. You might see Bellucci up top with De Rosario if Henry is his suspension's going to hold, or even if he gets the red card suspension rescinded by the league, maybe he will be, I would have to say, on the bench. Probably they're going to hold him up as a second-half substitute just in case they're going to need a goal from him. So I could see that happening. And then they're going to travel to face the Chicago Fire on the road on Sunday the 26th, and then they're back home for an Open Cup match against either FC New York or the New York Pan-Cyprian Freedoms. Finally, final interview of the night, Austin Deleuze. He gets his first MLS goal. Congratulations to Austin Deleuze, and here's his opinion of the match.
Austin, how would you describe this result?
Strange. very strange game. Obviously, we went up 1-0. Pretty comfortable first half. Thought we played pretty well. Came out very flat in the second half, too flat, and gave up three poor goals on set pieces. But yeah, overall, just a strange game. And I think we deserved a point to come out of it.
What changed as far as what Portland adjusted to in the second half when they came out?
I don't think it's as much as what they adjusted to. It was just that we came out so flat that we basically gifted them three goals. And so I think that was the biggest thing. You know, it's something that we need to look at for the next game in Seattle.
Well, you got the Red Bulls on the board with your first MLS goal. Tell us about it. How was it set up for you?
It was a good goal. Great transition goal. Started around midfield, played Thierry. Thierry played Dero. Dero drags it back, and then Thierry had the presence of mind to leave it. And, I was just fortunate enough to take a good first touch and slot it home.
Now, you went right to the bench to celebrate. Why?
I spent a lot of time there. So, it just felt right, I guess. I don't know.
Well, congratulations on that goal. Austin, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Austin Deleuze, ladies and gentlemen. Congratulations to him. First MLS goal in his career. And, what a place to do it. But in Portland, and of course, why not celebrate with those bench players? He spent all of last year there and a little bit of the beginning of this year here. Austin Deleuze, it looks like, when he got drafted last year from Wake Forest, you saw some glimpses of him during the Open Cup qualifiers last year. And, we'll see what he can do now. He's got a full season now. Doesn't have to worry about injuries here and there. And ready to go, ready to play. Good for him. Good for Austin Deleuze. Looking at the table, MLS all the way. And we're not doing East and West right now. Full table once again. The LA Galaxy, 34 points in 18 matches played. 9 wins, 7 draws, 2 losses, 25-4, 15 against. Seattle currently in second place, 25 points, 17 matches played. That's why they're in second. 6 wins, 7 draws, 4 losses, 19-4, 15 against. They're a plus 4. FC Dallas in third. Amazing what they've done. Amazing what Shelves Hyman has done with FC Dallas ever since David Faria got his ankle broken and lost for the rest of the year. 25 points out of 15 matches played, 7 wins, 4 draws, 4 losses, 18-4, 16 against, a plus 2. Of course, the New York Red Bulls in fourth place right now. There are 15 matches played, 23 points, 5 wins, 8 draws, and only 2 losses, 24 goals, 4, 16 against. Salt Lake City in fifth, 13 matches played, 6 wins, 4 draws, 3 losses, 22 points, 15-4, 8 against, 7 plus. Philadelphia in sixth, 14 matches played, 6 wins, 4 draws, 4 losses, 22 points, 16-4, 12 against with a plus 4. Colorado with 16 matches played, 5 wins, 7 draws, four losses, 22 points, 18-4, 17 against, plus one. Columbus Crew is in eighth, 15 matches played, 5 wins, 6 draws, 4 losses, 21 points, 16-4, 16 against. San Jose in ninth, 14 matches played, 5 wins, 4 draws, 5 losses, 19-4, 20 against, 24, 17 against with 19 points. And Houston, currently, 16 matches played, 4 wins, 6 draws, 6 losses, 18 points, 19-4, 20 against. Chivas USA in 11th with 14 matches played, 17 points, 4 wins, 5 draws, 5 losses, 17-4, 16 against. Portland with the draw, 14 matches played, 18 points, 5 wins, 3 draws, 6 losses, 18-4, 22 against. DC United, 13th place, 14 matches played, 4 wins, 5 draws, 5 losses for 17 points, 19-4, 25 against. 14th place, Chicago Fire, 15 games played, 2 wins, 9 draws, 4 losses for 15 points, 17 goals for, and 20 goals against. New England in 15th, 16 matches played, 3 wins, 6 losses, 7 losses, 15 points, they're at a minus 7, 12-4, 19 against. Toronto FC in 16th place, 17 matches played, 15 points, 2 wins, 9 draws, 6 losses, 15-4, 26 against, with a negative 11 on the differential. Vancouver is not in the basement, 16 matches played, 2 wins, 8 draws, 6 losses, 14 points, 17-4, 22 against. And finally, Kansas City, 13 matches played, 3 wins, 4 losses, 4 draws, 6 losses, 13 points, 17-4, 20 against. New York Red Bulls currently the point ahead of Philadelphia in the East, 2 points ahead of Columbus in the West. LA Galaxy, 31 points clear, 6 points clear of FC Dallas and Seattle, 9 points clear of Colorado, 10 points clear of Salt Lake in the West. That is your MLS full tabled standings. You know, ladies and gentlemen, the big question is going to be officiating. What is going on with American soccer referees? And, of course, the other question is going to be, what will happen if Eric Soler gets fined? I don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of questions to be asked, and hopefully, of course, one of the top officials formerly in this league and in U.S. soccer is Brian Hall. Hopefully Brian Hall will be pounding the books, probably throwing it at the referees, as, you know, they deserve, basically, to get yelled at, because I think they're not doing their jobs. And they're not doing their jobs at the moment. It's a terrible thing of what's going on. It's a terrible thing of how these matches are being officiated. And I believe that there needs to be something to fix this. Now, I have said in the past that the former Italian referee, Pierluigi Collina, maybe he needs to be brought in. Maybe he needs to be brought into U.S. soccer. And he needs to help these referees officiate a match a lot better. I'm not saying that Brian Hall should be dismissed. I'm not saying that. I think Brian Hall is one of the better American officials that was on the field when he did his job. I think Brian Hall did a fantastic job when he was able to officiate a match. Maybe Brian Hall just needs some help. And I don't think it's that difficult to ask for help. I don't think it's that terrible to ask for help. Maybe, just maybe, he needs some help just to get the officials back on track. Other than that, we are having a problem with all aspects of U.S. soccer. Because if the run of play or the play on the pitch is improving, why is our on-field officials regressing? And that is something that really needs to be looked at. And I'm being serious about this. I don't want to harass about officials. I don't want to complain about officials. But something tells me that U.S. Soccer needs to do a better job in making these referees learn the laws of the game. And that's why I feel these things need to be changed. Upcoming schedule for the New York Red Bulls. This Thursday night on ESPN2, 10 o'clock, the Red Bulls bringing home Dane Richards from the Gold Cup will be at Quest Field to take on the Seattle Sounders, 10 o'clock at night on ESPN2. Channel 35 locally or wherever your cable box says it is. And, of course, check your local listings if you're outside of the tri-state area. Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, June 26th, the New York Red Bulls will be at Chicago to take on the Chicago Fire. And, of course, they won't have Rafa Marquez, Tim Ream, or Juan Agudelo available. Unless Agudelo doesn't play, then maybe the celebrating won't hurt them that much, but it'll be a long cross-country trip. Then the Red Bulls will come home for a quick home match, U.S. Open Cup Round 3 proper, the very first U.S. Open Cup round match proper at Red Bull Arena. Last year was 3 qualifiers at home, the road trip to Harrisburg. This year, they're going to host their first U.S. Open Cup match round proper. And that is something I've been waiting for a good while. That is something I've been waiting for, and I can't wait for it, to be honest with you, because let me tell you something. Finally, the last time this club, either as Metro Stars or Red Bulls, hosted a U.S. Open Cup match in the proper rounds was the Open Cup final back in 2003 at Giant Stadium and the loss to the Chicago Fire by a goal. They lost that championship final at Giant Stadium to the Chicago Fire. Damani Ralph put in that game-winning goal. This is the first time there will be a round proper match at Red Bull Arena. History being made once again at Red Bull Arena for a round match proper. Round 3, June 28th at Red Bull Arena. Time of that match, not aware of it at the moment. We'll find out after tomorrow night's round 2 proper matches between the Pan-Cyprian Freedoms and FC New York. So get ready for that one. And then back on the road to the West Coast, July 2nd, the 4th of July weekend, as the New York Red Bulls will travel to San Jose and face the Earthquakes. Then they come back for 2 matches at home, a midweek tilt on the 6th of July, hosting Toronto FC, and then on the 9th of July, on a Saturday night, the Red Bulls will be hosting DC United. So up to there, we've got a couple of road matches, a couple of home matches. It's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait for that. It's going to be great. Once again, tomorrow night, round 2 of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup begins as the New York Pan-Cyprian Freedoms will be hosting FC New York at Belson Stadium in St. John's University in Queens. That's between Utopia and Union Parkways. And the winner of that match will be traveling to Red Bull Arena once again for round three. Harrisburg City Islanders will be hosting the Rochester Rhinos. Here's how the situation is going to happen. The winner of this match will face the Chicago Fire. Here's how it's going to happen. If Harrisburg defeats Rochester, they will fly to Chicago and take on the Fire. If Rochester wins, Rochester will host the Fire at Salinas Stadium. The next match, the Richmond Kickers hosting the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Winner of that match will be traveling to Columbus, Ohio, and taking on the Columbus Crew. The winner, as we were talking with Chris Enger, the winner of the Wilmington Hammerheads-Charlotte Eagles match will be traveling to Real Salt Lake at Rio Tinto Stadium. The winner of the Charleston Battery, as they host the Orlando City S Soccer Club, winner will fly over to Frisco, Texas, to take on FC Dallas. The Madison 56ers of the National Premier Soccer League will be facing the Chicago Fire's under-23 PDL team. The winner will travel to Livestrong Sporting Park and take on Sporting Kansas City. Sorry about that. Kitsap Pumas hosting Real Colorado Foxes. The winner will face the Seattle Sounders on June 28th. And then on Wednesday, June 29th, the LA Galaxy will be hosting either the winner of the Ventura County Fusion LA Blues match. So the winner of that will face the Los Angeles Galaxy as the road team. And it's going to be very interesting to see. And that match will be played on Wednesday, June 29th. So that will be a late night match. Don't know why it's not going to be on a Tuesday, but they asked to be move it to a Wednesday, which they did. And then once these second-round matches are played, we're probably going to find out later on in the week where the quarterfinal matches will be played, because U.S. Soccer will always make sure that these matches that are going to be played, that there will be a winner, and determining who wins the bid. So we'll see what's going to happen. Don't know if there will be a reseed or not. Maybe it'll be as is. We'll have to wait and find out and see how it's going to happen. But New York Red Bulls have not moved past round three since they defeated the Wilmington Hammerheads by a final of 2-1 in the 2006 U.S. Open Cup. So once again, Red Bulls going to try to advance past round three this year, and they're going to be waiting for the winners of either the New York Pan-Cyprian Freedoms or FC New York. So it should be interesting to see. I know I can't wait for it. I just can't wait for it. It's going to be fantastic. Once again, this Thursday night, ESPN2, 10 o'clock, Red Bulls at Seattle. Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, Red Bulls at Chicago Fire. That will also be on, that'll be on ESPN. I'm assuming that if you're not able to get to Red Bull Arena on Tuesday night, June 28th, I believe the website will probably do a live video stream of the match. And that will probably be with MSG Network, Steve Cangelosi, and Shep Messing. So that should be pretty interesting. But please, everyone, please come over to Red Bull Arena. Once the date's been announced, I'll let everyone know on the next 40 Scenes Fire soccer podcast show, which will be on the 27th. Time change. For those of you following the U.S. Men's National Team in the Gold Cup, big thing. This Wednesday night, June 22nd, originally I put down midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific for the post-match show against Panama, because Mexico is in the other semifinal, and I thought Mexico would be going first, because originally it said quarterfinal one versus quarterfinal winner two at 7 o'clock, and then quarterfinal winner three versus quarterfinal winner four at 10 o'clock. Now it's changed. Now it's going to be USA at 7 against Panama, and Mexico versus Honduras
at 10 o'clock. Jesus, boy. Earl Reed of MLS Talk will be joining me for a post-match show, which will be on the 22nd at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. But just in case that there will be extra time against Panama, you know what? I'm gonna push back the start time because I don't want to do it in the middle of extra time. And if there is gonna be penalties, I'm gonna push that back as well because I have to. I don't want to interfere in the middle of the game because we want to make sure everything's fine. But if the show starts while there is some form of penalty round shootout going on or extra time going on, then you know we're gonna have to do the show and there's nothing I can do about it. We're just gonna have to do the show. But I got to say this, it's going to be interesting what's going on. And, of course, Thursday night, June 23rd at 8 o'clock, before the Red Bulls take on the Seattle Sounders, I'll be hosting U.S. Open Cup Round 2 proper review show, once again being joined by Tavio Palazzolo from the Cup.us. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I know that my audience, I know you guys, I just want to say something right now. I know the real serious listeners of this show. I know for a fact you would not pull these childish pranks that happened to me on Thursday the 16th with Tavio. Basically, I have to say that I did not enjoy what that caller did. And it was the same caller who basically told his friend to call up so he would listen to him making this joke. It's childish. This is a serious show. This is supposed to be a serious show. This is supposed to be a fun show at the same time, but I'm not going to stoop to childish pranks because I've had enough of that type of malarkey when you got to do something serious. I really did not like it. I really did not appreciate it. I was not happy it happened. You know, I am serious, you know. I try to be as serious as I can. I mean, look, this is a serious discussion. You know, you're trying to make sure that everything's going well here, Pavone. I mean, I don't mind having fun with the guests, but the point is that, you know, the U.S. Open Cup is being disrespected. Exactly. I would like to leave that crap somewhere else. Exactly. We don't need that. I don't need someone calling in pretending to order a pizza because he's being immature. You know? You want to pull it on someone else, you can go ahead and do it. I'm trying to keep it to soccer. I'm trying to make sure that American soccer does get the forefront here. Because the U.S. Open Cup continues to be disrespected. I don't like it, and I'm trying to show respect for it. That's why once I started this live internet show, we talk about American soccer, we talk about MLS, we talk about the U.S. men's national team, and we're also going to do U.S. women's national team game post-match shows because of the Women's World Cup. I'm going to have Jeff Kasouf on, who is, of course, the king of women's soccer coverage. Brett Luthner, who I met at Connecticut School of Broadcasting, he's also radio play-by-play voice of Sky Blue FC of the WPS, and he'll be joining me as well, along with Jeff Kasouf, and I can't wait for that to happen. That'll be on Tuesday afternoon on the 28th of June. You know, gotta show respect and show people in the mainstream sports media that soccer can be discussed. Soccer can be discussed, not just the European games, but American soccer. The U.S. Open Cup, and of course it's being covered fantastically by those that do the Cup.us, Tavio Palazzolo, Josh Hakala. Those guys do a fantastic job tracking down the qualifying matches in the lower leagues, of course the MLS qualifying matches in the lower leagues. This is why
we have to not treat it like it's a joke. And these two guys, and it was originally, I thought that was the head coach of the Pittsburgh Riverhounds that was supposed to come on. And in fact, it was not. It was this guy that kind of knew Tavio. And then it was him, and then it was that same number again. He brought his friend on to act like a real dunce. And I will not stand for that. You know, this is a serious thing here. We're here to promote American soccer. Well, at least that's what I'm trying to do, promote American soccer. I give you 2 live hours of coverage, and at the same time, if you guys miss the live coverage, that's why there's the archive. I'm happy to do this for you, and I love doing this, and I enjoy doing this. I could have done a Red Bulls podcast all by itself, but I felt that I needed to discuss American soccer as a whole. Well, I have to explain it, basically, Pavone. I have to explain what's going on, but don't worry. I'm not going to explain it anymore. I'm not going to give them any more attention because I'm done with it. But to be honest here, you know, this is why I wanted to do this. Because we need to discuss the American leagues, the American players, the American clubs, and the American national teams. And even the domestic American cups. This is important stuff. This is important stuff here that I know that all of you have been begging for. There will always be podcasts. There will always be a network of shows coming in and discussing everything. I know you want variety. I try to give you my end of it too. That's why I do this, because I love the game, because I love this game, and I want to make sure that American soccer is on the forefront. It's slowly getting there, but sooner or later we got to knock on the door hard. You know, being in the New York City area, the tri-state area here, and it's really, really tough to crack open because you always hear this, you always hear this, you always hear that, it's not going to work, no one cares, we don't want it, it's not worth our time, blah, 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 we don't want to hear it. But, you know, MLS is trying to do their own thing, I'm trying to do my thing, we're all trying to do my thing. And of course, you know, I made the decision to do this. I made the decision to do 2 hours, a national hour and a local hour, because I felt that the rest of the league, the North American Soccer League, and yes, I'll occasionally have members of the USL leagues come on, because, and even the lower divisions. Look at the NPSL, Ryan Knapp, a good man who is dedicated to the NPSL, and that's growing in stature every single year. Love to talk about it. Love to make sure that everything gets covered. Everything has to get covered. Hopefully I'll get a club from the U.S. Adult Soccer Association to come on the show. But that is why you need shows like this. And hopefully this can be progressed. This can be on a bigger and better plane. Not saying I want to end the podcast or end the internet radio show, but at least, you know, at least I feel that this can happen. That this can be big time here. If people want to give it a legitimate chance. That's all I'm saying. Give it a legitimate chance. Don't say, oh, yeah, okay, go, here's the microphone. Whatever, here you go. Do it, we don't care. And look. You guys care. Because you're looking for people that are being serious about this. Serious stuff. And if you know, I don't do it, someone else will, and that's fine. we don't mind because we're all in this together. This is something that can become big if people want to give it a legitimate chance. More needs to be done. No matter how many times I say it, more needs to be done. I just have to say that it's a bit disappointing when you have certain people in certain places in this country, excuse me, radio-wise, that they don't want to give it a legitimate shot, or they just don't want to give it a shot at all. It's not my fault. You know, I mean, you can't assume it's just, you know, they don't play with their hands. I mean, look, people do watch, Americans watch soccer, plain and simple. They do. Everyone watches the European leagues, and I understand it's the best leagues in the world, and no matter how many times I say it in blue in the face, I understand that. But the point is this. It's getting better every single year. It's growing all the time. We need to get these people to understand it's not once every 4 years that between a month and a half, it's the only time to really care about the game. Honestly, it's terrible. More needs to be done. And if these people don't want to do it, then you know what? Who's going to do it? People like me. People like those locally Seeing Red podcast, Mark Fishkin and Dave Martinez. Of course, our friends up in Canada for the It's Called Football show, Dwayne Rollins, Ben Rycroft, Ben Knight. You know, they do a fantastic job up there in Canada. And, of course, it's a Canadian perspective. But still, the point is that just because people think the game in this country stinks, that doesn't mean that it's not worth it. Because they don't know what they're talking about. They assume something that they don't know. And the ignorant ones are the people that assume it stinks. Or, basically, the ignorant people are the ones who would rather get the quick ratings jump because they're showing or they're broadcasting soccer from England. Excuse me. You know, I'm not here to say that that's not true. But I find it terrible that these are the people that just don't want to give the American soccer a chance. Now, Fox Soccer Channel, in my opinion, has done a good job with their step up in post-game show, pre-game show, graphics, intro music, outro music, going to commercial, coming out of commercial music, scoreboard, everything. They have done, in my opinion, a good restart to covering soccer in this country. Now the question is this: what more can they do? What more can Fox Soccer Channel do? What more can ESPN do? In fact, what would happen if Versus was involved in producing American soccer, Major League Soccer, maybe even the North American Soccer League? What can they do? I don't know. I really don't know. But I hope they have an idea. And at the same time, just as Fox Soccer Channel is dedicated in producing and promoting the Premiership, Serie A, as well as the Carling Cup and the FA Cup, shouldn't they be also producing more U.S. Open Cup matches than just the final championship match? Because if they did that, then American fans would know and feel confident that Fox Soccer Channel is taking it more seriously. Right now, it's a very good start on the redoing the restarting of this of this nice little ride, and hopefully it will continue to improve as the years go on. I want to thank my guests, Jeff Reed, Chris Enger, Ignacio Rodriguez. Just to let everyone know, once again, this Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern, USA-Panama Gold Cup Semis post-match show, Open Cup Round 2 show on the 23rd. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening to the show, and please enjoy your football. Thank you very much, and have a good night, everybody.